What's up, fools? It's a new week. Today is April 9th, 2018. It was an interesting day today. I don't know if you guys read the news last night, but somebody bombed Syria, and we have no idea who it was. And so, naturally, that was a great excuse for the markets to rip at the open this morning. And stocks mostly ripped for a majority of the day. The S&P, I think, was as high as, it was over 2650 at one point. It hit like 2652 or 2653 at one point before absolutely getting wrecked at the end of the day on the headline du jour, which is actually a type of soup with a light chicken broth. No, actually, it's the headline of the day, which was that Michael Cohen's office and home had been raided by the Federal Bureau of Investigations. Michael Cohen, for those of you that don't know anything about politics, like me, is the lawyer of President Trump. And as I've said in the past, if you're looking for an information source, if you're looking for something that you can use as a citation in some type of scholarly paper, please don't listen to this podcast. That's one of the nice things that I like about Twitter and all my followers, is because you know what? There's a lot of stuff that I don't know a lot about, and often I post that, and people will correct me. Sometimes nicely, hey, you forgot this or this, and sometimes not nicely, when somebody responds by saying, I would like to crush your head like a ping pong ball in a vice grip. And then offers a correction to what I said wrong. So either way, I appreciate the correction. And so at the end of the day today, the market sold off, and the Dow finished the day up like 30 or 40 points, I think, after being up a couple hundred points during the day. So there are a couple things I wanted to touch on. Of course, this is not really going to be political because I don't like to make my podcast political too much, although I do want to try and do my best to give a semi-objective look as to what the best and the worst outcome of this Michael Cohen scenario could be. And really what I want to focus on is why this could be tumultuous for the stock market, not only in the second half of this year, but in the second half of President Trump's term. The Stormy Daniels controversy, as I understand it, goes something like this. Years ago, these two had an affair with one another, right? I did a whole podcast on this. I said I knew what Trump's motivation likely was, being a 60-year-old man and this woman being a 28 or 27-year-old porn star at the time. And I also questioned what her motivation could be. She admitted in the CNN 60 Minutes interview, rather. I said CNN because it was Anderson Cooper, but she admitted in the 60 Minutes interview that she didn't find President Trump attractive. And so a couple podcasts ago when I talked about how much I thought the media was beating this story to death, I was kind of wondering why nobody had asked her, what was your motivation at the time to sleep with Donald Trump? I think everybody on both sides of the aisle knows probably what that answer is. We'll leave it at that. I asked one of my liberal friends, and I also asked one of my conservative friends if they would like to come on the podcast and talk about this today, and they both said no. As a matter of fact, I think one of them said fuck no. And so that should give you some idea as to what the climate is right now for discussing politics. I can't give you the reasoning behind both of them, but they were both really funny reasons. So I said no problem, I'll just do my best to try and cover both sides of the story. Which is an endeavor that I know is risky and difficult to do and that not everybody's going to agree with. But as a libertarian, I feel like I can often see both points. I think there's a lot of middle ground for libertarians between conservatives and liberals. Namely, I find myself on the liberal side of things when it comes to social issues, and I find myself on the conservative side of things when it comes to spending and finance. But for the most part, my political philosophy is live and let live and don't infringe on the rights of other people. Less government is probably a better idea. And that's really it. I could kind of expound on that and go into the details of many different aspects of things that I could have a political view on. But there's no point. The point is that for today, I'm going to try and run back both arguments from both sides of the aisle. So be mindful of the fact that I'm trying to play mediator to both sides, and I'm trying to give both sides a fair shake here. The liberal argument, as I understand it, when it comes to Stormy Daniels, put aside Mueller's investigation and put aside collusion with Russia, because that is the purpose of the underlying Mueller investigation. I'm not sure today, you know, what we're looking at with this headline of Mueller kind of drifting into Stormy Daniels. Certainly it's something that I had heard could come up under the purview of his investigation, though there is a part of me that wonders if the Russia collusion story is kind of, you know, if maybe he's veering off that track. I mean, we don't really know, so it's very difficult to speculate because we don't really know what Mueller is thinking or what he's doing. I do know that when Mueller started his investigation, both sides of the aisle seemed to be okay with Mueller being the guy to lead the investigation. So regardless of what's going on now, I would, you know, via a common sense approach, kind of expect both sides of the aisle to allow Mueller to do his business and see what he is able to pull in with the old proverbial dragnet. So the liberal argument here for the Stormy Daniels side of the story is that Trump may have broken campaign finance laws by paying this woman off. And this is something I didn't discuss in my last podcast when I was talking about this, because really all I was talking about was how fed up I was with the story. I think it, you know, this woman has been given way too much time in the media. Certainly, I think it's relevant what she has to say, but I'm not sure her intentions are pure. And I'm not sure that she's doing this for anything other than money and attention, but that remains to be seen. So let's make the argument for the anti-Trump crowd, which is that he may have committed federal election campaign contribution violations, which amount to felonies, to the best of my understanding. If it turns out that the campaign knowingly paid this woman $130,000 11 days before the election, and it can be proven, I guess now it's being assumed, but it needs to be proven, I think, that she was paid because they feared that her coming forward would have some type of influence on the election, that can be a felony. And from there, you can go one of several ways. People are saying that, you know, Trump may have to testify in court. People are certainly saying that that would be impeachable. And so from the left side of things, if you forget about the whole Russia collusion thing, and let's just say that we're waiting on a adjudication there, that the Stormy Daniels, you know, scandal could eventually lead to there being some type of felony having been committed by somebody. And this all depends on who knew what, who made the payments to Stormy Daniels, and how that whole thing was concocted. And certainly with the seizure of Michael Cohen's records from his office and his home, which was reported today, we may get a little bit more clarity onto that, but certainly Robert Mueller is going to have some more clarity on that issue. But again, the headlines today were very nebulous, and so it was difficult to try and understand what it was that Mueller is looking for, aside from the fact that we know a search warrant was executed, and it was executed at Cohen's office and at his house. There's a lot of issues at play here. There's attorney-client privilege also that is in play. I'm not an attorney. I don't understand how attorney-client privilege works, but I do understand that there are that communications between Cohen and Trump would have to be subject to certain rules and guidelines, I think, that would differ from the normal ins and outs of a regular search warrant execution. I think there is some type of special committee or special something that needs to be assembled in order to independently review those things and determine whether or not they are of attorney-client privilege. I don't really understand exactly how it works, but I do know that I think some of the communication between Trump and Cohen is going to be subject to harsher standards for review or for usability. It basically sounds like a whole legal mess that I'm glad I'm not involved in any meaningful way other than just shooting the shit about it now on my podcast. And so the argument that has the markets a bit volatile today derives probably from the fact that Trump could eventually be impeached if it is found that he violated campaign contribution laws, which again are a felony. On the other side of the aisle, the people that are in support of President Trump are saying that this probe really kind of has gone a little too far. I know Michael Cohen came out and made a statement today that said that the search warrant is, you know, over the top and unnecessary. Of course, that all remains to be seen depending on what Robert Mueller finds, if anything. But people in support of the president are also making the point that what started as an investigation into collusion with Russia now seems to be drifting possibly into the Stormy Daniels realm, and that, you know, this was something that happened years ago and it's irrelevant and the media is turning it into a circus. All good points that I understand. But on the other hand, if it was in violation of campaign laws and it was, you know, can be proven that the contribution or that the payment made to Stormy Daniels was in fact a campaign contribution, then that has to be adjudicated by somebody with a much better understanding of the law than I have. So I can see things from both sides of the aisle here. I feel as though it's important to get to the bottom of it. I think, you know, Trump supporters, if there is nothing to be found here, then those who support the president will have some ground to stand on because they will have been right in their assertion that perhaps the Mueller investigation is, you know, grasping for straws at this point. However, if the Mueller investigation and the search of Michael Cohen's home and office turns up something that indicates that the Trump administration violated campaign law or that, you know, something that helps lends some type of substance to the ongoing Russian collusion investigation, then that's a different story. So we'll have to wait and we'll have to see what the outcome of Mueller's findings are. There's been a lot of points like this throughout Mueller's investigation where we're kind of just left guessing and we don't really know. And again, like I said earlier, when Mueller was appointed, there seemed to be bipartisan support for him being appointed. And so I would expect that both sides of the aisle will let him finish out his investigation and will respect the results of his investigation. That's, at least to me, I remember putting a tweet out when Mueller was appointed, and I think Newt Gingrich also put out a tweet that was complimentary of Robert Mueller. And I remember putting a tweet out saying, look, okay, now we have both sides of the aisle agree that this, you know, independent entity is performing the investigation and we should be okay. We should both agree to respect his findings at the end of this investigation. Now, whether or not, again, that's him kind of overreaching his boundaries and looking for something where there is nothing, or whether he turns up something of substance remains to be seen. So it's difficult to really speculate about right now. And I could, if I wanted to, I could, you know, if I really wanted to sensationalize, I could take one side or the other on this, and I could push out kind of theoretical possibilities in either direction. But if you want to listen to that shit, just go turn on one of the cable news networks, because that's not really what I'm trying to do here on this podcast. I'm trying to just lay things out. So let's talk about why this could have an effect on the market and why it might not have an effect on the market. Obviously, I think a worst case scenario, and many people on the left argue that Trump is committing treason, I guess would be the absolute worst possible thing that you could think of as a result of this investigation. But treason, to the best of my understanding, is an extremely high bar to get over. you know, treason is, to the best of my understanding, punishable by life in prison or, you know, even by execution back in the day. But also, to the best of my understanding, treason is extremely difficult to prove, and it would need to be something demonstrous. It would have to be demonstrous collusion with, I believe, a known entity, a known enemy, rather, of the United States to do harm to the country. And so I think that, much to the chagrin of the left, I think the treason bar is extremely high. Now, of course, I'm not a constitutional law professor. I'm not really a professor of anything. So I would encourage you to do your own research. But from the limited reading that I've done, treason is an extremely high bar. And I think even in the case where, you know, the Mueller investigation finds that Trump colluded with Russia to improperly sway the election in his favor, I think there's a whole set of I think there's a whole litany of other charges that Trump would face in lieu of treason. I think there's like espionage and all different types of things. So I think treason is off the table. But let's just say that the worst case scenario here for the president, which I likely see to be the worst case scenario, is an impeachment, and an impeachment that happens quickly in short order. So if the Mueller investigation were tomorrow to come out and find some type of demonstrable evidence that Trump, you know, colluded with the Russians, or there was something really over the top, he would potentially be impeached very quickly. If it was something so egregious and the House and the Senate both had to push through an impeachment together, meaning that even people in the GOP would say, okay, well, enough's enough. Whether or not that will or has happened, I think remains to be seen, obviously, but I can't help but think that, like, in the stock market, if something was out there, it may have leaked already. But on the other hand, we'll have to see. We'll have to see what the Mueller investigation turns up. The best case scenario for the Trump administration. So let's just talk about the impeachment real quick. You know, if Trump is impeached and there's even a case where the Senate might agree to an impeachment, even say during the midterms, the Democrats win the House and they move to impeach the president on anything, and the Senate agrees, in that case, what would happen is we would have President Pence, and I don't think there would be any policy changes. I actually think that for the stock market, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, because you get the benefit of the policies that have helped support the market, which have basically been tax cuts and deregulation, and you get it with a little bit less volatility. And so I think in a case where, and I hate to say this because I'm not a long, and I don't really buy the whole stock market going up all the time story. Having said that, I think if the market were to dip on an impeachment and an impeachment were imminent, resulting in Mike Pence becoming president of the United States, I think that's a dip that you have to buy, because I think just like the election, assuming the election bounce was not the Fed coming in and buying futures, which, you know, I think it could have been, but assuming that that was people just coming to their senses and saying, oh, Trump's going to deregulate and Trump's going to cut taxes and he's going to do all these things that are going to be great for the economy and great for the stock market. Assuming that the market would dip on an impeachment, I think you would have a similar situation where people would come back in and bid stocks back up as soon as the volatility died down and they realized that policy is pretty much going to remain the same and volatility might actually come in now. So I think that's a worst-case scenario. I think the worst-case scenario is you wind up with the stock market probably falling and then maybe resuming where it was, at least for the short term. A best-case scenario for those who support the president obviously would be the Mueller investigation finding nothing and the Stormy Daniels controversy kind of just going away, either by virtue of it not being worth pursuing or by virtue of the president and his administration being able to prove that they paid her this money or that Cohen paid her this money without, you know, not in violation of campaign contribution laws. And I think if that happens, I think that's, you know, an instance where the market moves higher also. So it's, as much as I hate to say it, it's difficult to try and say that there's an imminent catalyst that could drive stocks lower, you know, as long as you buy the narrative that stocks are this high to begin with because of tax cuts and because of deregulation and because of policies that the Trump administration has put into effect. I don't really see an instance where those policies, where they are yanked. You know, if the Democrats win the House in the midterm, which I think people for the most part are expecting them to do, I think that'll make it difficult for new legislation to pass and will certainly kind of grind things to a halt. But I'm not sure that it's going to do much to reverse the gains that the market has made over the last 18 months or whatever it's been. Over the course of the longer term, however, I think there could be a stage of added volatility. And certainly you have the prescription for it from the political world. So you have all of this stuff going on right now with the Mueller investigation. You never know, you know, if Trump could do something crazy like come out and fire Robert Mueller, which I think would send a shock to the markets. You have a lot of unknowns right now. You have the trade war with China. You have this mess in Syria. You have what is supposed to be an upcoming meeting with North Korea to discuss supposedly denuclearization, which I think is one of the reasons stocks got a smack in the ass this morning. And also, you know, you have an up-and-coming conflict here that Trump is facing with Iran, who made a statement last night that pretty much informed the Trump administration that if they were going to try and renege on the nuclear deal, that there would be some type of consequences as a result of that. So there's a lot of balls up in the air right now for the Trump administration to juggle. In addition to that, you have this rotating door of administration officials who keep coming and going, and you have a significant amount of pressure on the administration from the media. And so it's not hard to conceive that volatility on the political front could continue, especially given what happened today and the Mueller investigation, once we find out what the hell is going on with that. But one of my friends made a very good point, which is that this volatility is coming at a time where the market is pretty frothy. Financial assets in general right now are, I believe, extremely overvalued. And so we're looking at an increase in volatility. So you have kind of two ways. The cart can lead the horse. If volatility spikes because of something non-market related, that could ultimately drag the price of financial assets lower or drag the price of the market lower. Or you have an instance where the market moves lower because things are overpriced, and that in turn creates volatility. Doesn't really matter which one goes first. And in this day and age of algorithms and computers leading other computers, it doesn't really matter. The point, though, is that all of this political volatility and the geopolitical volatility that we're seeing comes at a time when equities aren't cheap. As a matter of fact, you know, we are arguably at the ass end of a bull market that has lasted 9 years, 10 years now. And the Shiller PE ratio is over 30. Equities are very expensive. We have both the Fed and the ECB looking to unwind. So there's some craziness happening in the bond market right now. You have a Fed narrative that has set the market up to expect at least 3 rate hikes this year. Whether or not that is going to happen and what the psychology of the market will be if it does or does not is really anybody's guess. You could make an argument either way. You could say if the Fed goes ahead and raises them, that's bullish because the Fed believes that everything's on track and everything's fine and they wouldn't be raising interest rates if everything wasn't perfect. You could say if the Fed raises rates, it's bearish because the cost of capital for everybody is going to go up and the, you know, debt servicing is going to go up for individuals, for municipalities, for corporations. You can also make the case that, say, the Fed cuts back on its rate hikes this year. Say it does 2 or 1 or 0. You can make the case that that's bullish because cost of capital is going to stay low and there's not going to be some crunch on, you know, interest payments for everybody. So that should kind of keep capital moving around and keep spending moving in the right direction according to our Federal Reserve. And that, you know, less money to be paid on servicing debt and, interest payments is available for equity investments and things like that. Or you can make the case that if the Fed pulls back its scheduled rate hikes, that it's bearish because the Fed obviously doesn't think that the economy is doing as well as they had previously said it was. So when you take the two Fed narratives of they will hike or they won't hike and you want to make a bullish or a bearish argument for each, it's really easy. And that's why at this juncture, I mean, obviously you want to say everything is bullish because everything just kind of looks bullish nowadays anyways. Doesn't really matter. The market doesn't really give a crap. The market is going to put a bullish headline or a bullish spin on anything that happens, it seems. But that just shows you how easy it is to make the argument for the market to move in either direction. The point of the matter is you have a point here where the Fed is at least trying to tighten. And so with an increase in geopolitical volatility, we're also going to see somewhat of an increase in volatility stemming from monetary policy. Now, this is little kind of fairy tale baby volatility because it's coming as a result of Fed policy, which is already extraordinarily accommodative. So these are just little baby spikes of volatility that come from the Fed, because we know that they'll do QE4 if they have to. So nobody really is worried too much about a major crash. But having that volatility at the same time as having the Mueller probe maybe coming to a close and the midterm elections coming up says to me that we could be in for a couple more years of volatility. I think in a best case scenario, I think we have kind of a stock picker's market for the next couple of years. I think gold's finally going to catch a bid at some point as well, too. I'm not sure where it is now, but I saw that gold was 1320 or 1330. A lot of technicians who I usually don't really listen to, but sometimes with commodities, especially like gold, where there's not too much of a difference between gold being at, you know, 1370 or 1400 an ounce. But a lot of technicians think that $1,400 is a really key level for gold, and if it breaks through there, we could see gold run. I think that'll happen probably over the next 18, 24 months. I think gold will finally get bid up again as volatility, whether it's political or whether it's monetary policy-based, does tick up and does pick up a little bit. But I think a best-case scenario for equities here over the next, year or two is that it becomes a stock picker's market, which is basically a situation where speculative investments are pulled in and people look more towards value. So we saw a lot of sector rotation when Trump was elected, a lot of people pulling money out of tech. This was like one of the first times that the NASDAQ started to kind of pull in a little bit, and people were taking money out of their speculative tech investments and putting them into commodities and putting them into industrials and energy and oil and gas and these types of things. I think we could kind of see a similar rotation out of speculative investments, not just in technology, but companies that are aggressively valued or companies that have high multiples, and moved into companies that are a little bit more value-oriented or companies that would appeal to a value investor. So maybe investors are willing to give up some projected growth to have a little bit more safety. And in that type of situation, maybe the market stays steady, or, you know, the Dow drops 1,000 or gains 1,000 over the course of 2 years, but it doesn't really do much. I think it's that type of market environment where we see money come out of companies like Tesla, and we see money come out of companies that are really, you know, not profitable, not cash generative, but are just kind of floating along on a whim and a prayer. And we see money move into companies like one of my favorite companies right now, which is Timken, TKR, you know, is a more of a boring company. It's a ball bearing company, you know, but they trade 12 times earnings right now, or 13 times forward earnings. And they've been around for 100 years, and they're cash generative, and their product has a great moat. So I think we see that kind of shift in the market in a best case scenario. I think we have a stock picker's market. I don't really see a reason for the market to rally over the next 2 years. I really don't. I think some commodities will rally. I think gold will probably rally. I think the dollar may come in even a little bit more. But I don't see an instance where the overall market has a reason to rally. I just see the possibility of more volatility. A lot of the reasons that the market rallied over the last year or two, you know, have already been priced in many times over. Tax cuts was priced in, it felt like 150 times. It felt like deregulation was priced in over and over and over. So it's difficult to envision a scenario where there's some type of positive catalyst, even if the geopolitical risk globally gets dealt with and North Korea denuclearizes and everything works out with Iran and the Chinese trade wars wind up, you know, we wind up reaching a nice agreement with China that is amicable, that everybody loves. Even then, it's difficult to go out and make a case for the market going higher. I mean, right now, if everything was perfect and there was no geopolitical risk and the Mueller probe didn't exist and all these things were not up in the air, what would be the case for equities moving higher here? I don't really know. I don't think there is one. So, all in all, I feel like when the Mueller probe comes to an end, we're going to have a lot more information, and it's really difficult to try and speculate as to which direction that's going to go in. But regarding today's news, you know, I don't think we can make anything of it until we find out what the results were. You know, the fact that this guy Cohen had his offices raided and had his home raided, well, it means that Mueller may have seen cause to do so, but we don't know what he's looking for. We don't know if he's looking for Stormy Daniels stuff or if he's looking for collusion with Russia stuff. So it's tough to tell if it's an overreach now or not. Certainly, both sides of the case will be heard. I hope I did a good job of laying out kind of what the possible scenarios are. But either way, you know, I just don't see markets moving much higher over the next 2 years. I think there's too much muck out there right now. The geopolitical risk, there's just general monetary policy risk, and you combine that with the fact that equities are expensive. So what's going to light the fuel, or what's going to be the fuel that lights the fire under the Dow to move to, you know, 27,000. I don't know. I just don't see it there. I think focusing probably over the next couple of years on individual investments, companies with good balance sheets that are cash generative consistently, those are the types of names you're probably going to want to be in. Maybe you rotate into some commodities. You know, you look at things like gold, which I do think eventually is just going to move higher. It'll break that 1,400 and it'll go from there. Look, I like gold for the very, very long term. So, but right now, difficult to kind of gauge whether or not this is going to have an effect on the market. And I think maybe that's why the market kind of sold off to unchanged today, or Dow plus 30, Dow plus 40 after being up a couple hundred points. I don't know what the futures will do when they open in a couple of minutes, but my prediction going in tomorrow is maybe they swing a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be a profound move because we don't really know, again, what Mueller is looking for. So the range of possibilities, I think, for the outcome here is, you know, Trump winds up getting impeached, in which case we have a President Pence, which policy-wise I don't think means too much. Certainly, it would not help the Republicans win the next election. So that's maybe something that the market might want to start considering. And on the other hand, I think if Mueller comes up with nothing or there's nothing going on here, I think the markets will probably get a little pop from that. But again, I feel like things are stretched now, so it's difficult to make the case for equities moving much higher. Long story short, again, I think over the next 18 to 24 months, we probably have a market where people need to focus on value. And I think in a situation like this, the most important thing is reducing the amount of speculation. And I think that comes from pulling your money out of companies that either consistently need to raise capital or, you know, are over-levered. Those are the types of names I don't want to be in because we don't really know what's going on. And it seems like this volatility of late over the last couple of weeks, or actually the last couple of months, that the VIX has come up here near 20. I think it's the market telling us that this bull run probably on its way out, probably coming to a close. Whether or not we jump immediately back into, you know, some type of insane recession remains to be seen. But for right now, I'm not sure that today's headlines are going to have any type of profound effect in the short term until we figure out where they are going to lead. All right, I hope everybody has a lovely Monday night, and I will catch up with you guys later on this week.